skeleton walks into a bar and says, "Give me a beer and a mop." My name's Steve C. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 23rd, 2015. By no stretch of the word, that is my first sobriety date. I struggled with alcoholism in and out of AA for many years. Born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yeah, I'm a Yankee. A damn Yankee. I love it here. December 25th, 1961. I'm a Christmas baby. Big gift for Mama. I had my first drink at the age of 10. People from my era, when we got sick as kids, parents from time to time will give us what's called a hot toddy. Will give us a hot toddy. It's a brand new drink that... supposed to alleviate the cold. I love the way it made me feel. I don't recall, or I do recall the first time alcohol, where I really enjoyed alcohol. My parents had a real estate business, and they gave fancy bottles of Christensen Brother brandy to their customers, and they always kept a stockpile of this fancy bottled brandy for their customers. That was the big thing back then. I don't know if it's, I think it's skip certificates now, but back then they gave brandy to their customers. And I'm number 2 out of 4 boys. And through the years growing up, my older brother would always get into their liquor cabinet and steal a bottle of brandy that he would share with me and my 2 siblings. And as years gone, growing up, I remember as far back as I can remember, it was like we started, my older brother would get that one bottle and he'd share with me and my 2 little brothers. And the Christmas after that, we each got a quart, or my older brother and I got a quart, and I would share with my 2 little brothers. And I love this way that stuff made me feel. I remember my first big drunk. I was on a ski trip going to Alpine Valley Ski Hill, also music theater, with a neighbor. Neighbors in the station wagon, and we were all drinking vodka out of McDonald's cups. And I blew chow in the back of that station wagon and got the dry heaves, and we got real sick and didn't end up on the ski hill. I ended up laying down on a cot somewhere. Even though I was sick and puked and got dry heaves and stuff, I loved the way it made me feel, and I couldn't wait to get drunk again. We all talk about, when you hear people's stories, they talk about the emptiness, they talk about not fitting in. I too didn't feel like I fit in. I had a great childhood. My parents aren't like us. I never see my dad or my mother drunk, or even tipsy, for that matter. My parents were really successful in real estate and property management. I didn't grow up poor by any means. We got everything we wanted and then some. I mean, growing up as kids, we had motorcycles, we had snowmobiles, we went on great vacations. My parents loved us. There was no really abuse in the family. The only thing I can remember is being called stupid, dumb, crazy through the years, and that hurt, but it wasn't physical abuse by any means. We all went to private grade school, private high schools. And I remember I still, loved that alcohol. Got introduced to marijuana and other drugs in high school and loved it. Absolutely loved it. I had a hard time making it through high school because of the drugs and alcohol. I really didn't like the way I felt when I was sober. I didn't like the way I felt when I was high or drunk. I became suicidal, both sober and drunk. My parents thought I had mental health issues and put me in a psychiatric home for a while, and that didn't seem to help. I don't know why I remember some dates and I don't remember others. I remember right out of high school, September 19th, 1981, I was leaving a party in South Milwaukee coming home, and I got in a fight with some people at a party. I didn't like the way I felt, and I took my pickup truck over the side of what's called Suicide Hill and lived to talk about it. I broke my neck in 3 places, broke my back in 2. I remember one of my brothers coming to see me and told me that, God, we're lucky to have you, bro. There was a priest in here the other day reading you your last rites. You're lucky to be alive. You hear from many people in the program when they tell their stories, a mass majority of people, how we shouldn't be here. I know I shouldn't. Been in a lot of bad accidents, rollovers, you know, the broken neck and back thing. In the hospital for 11 weeks, physical therapy every other day for 18 months. Had to wear a neck brace, back brace, 24 hours a day, sleep with it, shower with it. Couldn't take it off. The second I was able to, once I got out of physical therapy, I was abusing the pain medication all along and getting a drink when I could when I was in that recovery. But as soon as I was able to, when I learned how to walk and use my I lost the movement of my left arm. My left arm still has a little numbness in it. When I got that neck brace, back brace off, and I was able to walk and move around, I went right back to drinking and drugs. That was my answer. That was my answer to everything. Drinking and drugs. I protected it with my drinking and drugs, with everything. Through the years, I was still hitting it hard, real hard. I'm probably the most hard-headed, stubborn guy I've met, even in these rooms. I didn't want to give it up, no matter what. I've been in several inpatients through the years. I think it was 8 or 9, 6 or 7 outpatients. I remember that accident over Suicide Hill was like a year after the fact. I got a letter in the mail from Franklin Police Department. They charged me with my first drunk driving, even though there was no cops involved. I don't know how that worked out. Maybe they got my blood alcohol level in the hospital, in the emergency room. I don't know what, but that made me angry as hell. Through the years, I picked up 4 more drunk drivings. Didn't like the way I felt. My motto back then is, if you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. And I use that line time and time again. I didn't like the way I felt, and I kept self-medicating. A lot of my story is a fog. I remember when I got sober this last time around, looking back, it kind of feels like I spent 30 years in a blackout, in and out and in and out. I remember when I was in physical therapy back there in 1982 for my spinal injury, some guys came to the physical therapy place. These 2 guys, with hindsight now, they were, looking back at it, they were doing what's called a 12-step call. They knew I was there, my accident was alcohol-related, and they took me to an AA meeting. And I convinced myself that I didn't belong there. There are a bunch of old-timers that have lost their marriages, their careers, their homes, due to their drinking. And the room was full of smoke, and I was young, 19 years old, and this isn't for me. I am not like you people. And I told them, I'm not like this. I'm not like you guys. I made a bad mistake. I got a drunk driving. I hurt myself. And this isn't for me. And, I told them, these guys, that, this isn't for me. And they said, well, the yets haven't happened to you yet. Fast forward a couple of years, I had my second and third drunk driving. And through the courts, I had to go and get the signatures. It's the signature that I'm attending meetings. And I still, you know, had to find a sponsor and crazy steps, and I just couldn't figure this stuff out. I didn't think it was for me. I didn't think I belonged. I found that sponsor and I told him, yeah, I never lost a lift. And he said, I got a job to go to. I work 50 hours a week. I shoot pool leagues. I play baseball for the bar. I got 2 Rottweilers at home. I got a steady girlfriend. What? 90 meetings in 90 days? You got to be nuts. This isn't for me. I can't do this stuff. And I had my priorities backwards. My sponsor said, because the yuts haven't happened, you're going to realize sooner or later in life that without sobriety, you're not going to have any of this. You hear all the time that alcoholism is a progressive disease. It definitely was for me. It got worse and worse and worse, and I just kept protecting it because it was the answer to my problems. About 10 years after that accident where I broke my neck and back, I was stumbling home from a bar in West Allis, Wisconsin. I drunk off my ace, and I kept looking behind me thinking somebody was following me, and nobody was there. It was a couple houses from my house, and I turned around and somebody christened me with a pool cue over the head. A pool cue or a pipe or something, and they beat me over the head. 11 or 12 days later, I woke up out of a bad coma in a trauma center in Milwaukee. Guy fractured my skull. That wasn't enough. That wasn't enough to make me sober up. It wasn't enough to make me want this. After that coma, I was in a convalescent center for 5 or 6 months. My brother reminds me to this day that I was crying like a baby because I couldn't figure out how to tie my shoes. I made a full recovery from that. Went back to the drinking and drugs. It was the answer to all my problems. If you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk, I'd say. Things got worse and worse. In and out of rehabs. Loss of jobs, relationships. I had a steady girlfriend when I had that brain injury. And I remember her coming to see me with one of my Rottweilers at the convalescent center. And I think that was a big turning point as far as me getting some of my marbles back. And I remember a couple weeks after moving back home, we're sitting after a dog walk, sitting on the front porch, and she said to me, and this is, back up, this is the woman, girlfriend that mended me up after getting beat up, that took care of my finances and paid my mortgage while I was in the hospital, bailed me out of jail numerous times, pretty much took care of me because I was just a mess. We were sitting on the front porch and she said to me, sometime in life, Steve, you're going to realize, you're going to meet someone a woman of your dreams, and you're going to think about moving in together. Well, we live together. You're going to think about moving in together and sharing your life with this partner. And what are you going to do when this woman says to you, time to choose? And I looked at her and I said, time to choose what? She said, well, what are you going to do when this woman says to you, it's either me or the alcohol and drugs? What are you going to say? And I didn't think long about that. I thought she was talking about somebody else. And I said, here's the door. If you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. She grabbed a bunch of her stuff and ran out of the house crying. Came back a couple days later with her 2 older brothers and got the rest of her belongings. And she was gone like the wind. Gave me an excuse to drink harder and use harder. Got introduced to crack cocaine. Things really spiraled downhill fast. My story is drugs and alcohol. I'll try and keep it on the alcoholism. But crack cocaine was huge in my life at that time. It was pretty much paycheck to paycheck. My older brother sold cocaine. I sold a little bit of cocaine. Got a cocaine delivery charge. Had to go and spend 42 months in a state prison for that, 10 years probation. It was tough. I remember my dad, my mom and dad at sentencing, my dad cry. First time I ever seen my dad cry. That was tough. I made it through it. Got out, got on probation, and went right back to it. If you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. Things got... went downhill. They went downhill fast. I lost that home due to foreclosure. I wasn't... stopped going to work. Stopped making the mortgage payment. Stopped paying my utilities. I ran an extension cord from my neighbor's house to my house for some time and stayed until the bank came and put that 42 hours sticker on the door. Moved my stuff into storage. I was awaiting sentencing on one charge or another. I went and did my time, got out. I also did quite a bit of time in correctional halfway houses, sobriety, what they call men's sober living now. And I just did what I had to do what I wanted to do. And I never really wanted to give in to this sobriety thing. I always was protecting king alcohol and king crack. I always had this feeling in the back of my head that I could do it one more time. Fast forward 2012, the big recession hit all over the country. I had a good, great job I was with on and off for 10 years, hanging overhead garage doors. 90% of the work was new construction. When the recession hit, the majority of us got shit canned, and this ain't that bad. Collect unemployment. Because of the recession, we got, I think it was 2.5 years at the time of unemployment. Collect my $850 rent from my tenant, my disability. I can still use, I can still drink. Things won't be that tough. The progression of the alcoholism and the drugs just went crazy. I lost that home to foreclosure. I couldn't get out. I went to see the bank. I went to see my lender to see what I could do, and he said the only way to save it, to save your house, is to come to the table with $12,000. I didn't have $12,000. I couldn't get $12,000. Most of the good friends I had through the years I pushed aside because drugs and alcohol took priority over girlfriends, work, relationships. It was brutal. I was homeless for a little bit. I had one last dog with me. I was living in my truck. I was living in the park. I set up camp in the south side of Whitnall Park. And I thought, this isn't that bad. I'm just going to camp out for the summer. It'll get better tomorrow. Tomorrow will be better. And tomorrow never came. I remember, you know, once or twice a week, I'd go to the grocery store and stock up at the liquor store and head back to my little campsite, and this isn't that bad. And one time I went back to my little campsite and someone stole my tent and my cooking stove and my sleeping bag, and all my camping equipment disappeared. That sucked. I started living out of my truck with the dog. I farmed off my dog to one of my brothers for a while because I could barely take care of myself. The progression of my alcoholism is taking a serious toll on me. Sleeping in the truck, I'd go to the golf Whitnall Park Golf Course, clubhouse, and take a shower every morning and shave and get clean and hit the bars, hit the dope houses when I could. A lot of fog about that past. A lot of fog up there on the dates. Somewhere in 2012, I was at a grocery store / liquor store stocking up, and I ran into an ex-girlfriend that I dated for a summer, and she couldn't handle my drinking and didn't like my drug use and kicked me to the curb. Well, at this grocery store, great to see you, blah, 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 where you living? In my truck. Well, I see you lost your home to foreclosure. I seen the stickers on the door a couple weeks ago, and I seen people there that weren't your people. She said, why don't you take Sammy and move in with me? Well, I didn't have to think twice about that. Roof over my head, shower. She had a beautiful liquor cabinet. 9-foot tournament table in her basement. I was in love. I did the best I could. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop using. It was all I knew. It was the answer to my problems. I thought I was in control. I didn't want to give up that stubborn control. If you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk, I'd say. There was absolutely no love between us. It was a love-hate relationship. She would often say, she drank just like I did. She'd often say, you just love me for my liquor cabinet, my pool table. And I'd say, well, yeah, you just love me for my dog. Back when I dated her a couple of years prior, her plans were to always move down to Fort Myers, Florida. She had an older sister down there that had her own business and was very successful. And as I was with her, she said, hey, this coming Christmas, I'm going down to visit my sister in Florida. If you and Sammy want to come along, that'd be great. You know I'm eventually going to move to Fort Myers, Florida. If you want to come along, that would be great. My dog and I joined her to Fort Myers, Florida for, I think, a 10-day vacation. We stayed at her sister's and everything was great. Her and her sister... drank and used just like me. Fast forward a little bit. That following year, I jumped on that bandwagon. I had absolutely nothing going for me in Milwaukee. Drugs and alcohol were my thing. I lost my home. I lost my job. The majority of my friends I kicked to the curb. Especially the ones that cared, I kicked them to the curb. Drugs and alcohol were my thing. I always said, if you don't like the way I drive, get off this sidewalk. Did that geographical change to Fort Myers, Florida? Thought things would change. Nothing changes, nothing changes. Kept drinking like a fish. Found out the cocaine was more pure and a hell of a lot more cheaper. Really started to barrel out of control. My first 24 hours in that house in Fort Myers, Florida. My dog ran out the front porch, ran into a neighbor's yard, and it got in a dog fight with the neighbor's pit bull. I wasn't there 24 hours, and I got in a fight with a neighbor and said some things I shouldn't have never said. Some racial slurs slid out of my mouth, and the cops were called, and the sheriff was called, and I had my first police contact within 24 hours of my move. Continued to drink like a fish. Things got out of hand. My girlfriend and her sister couldn't understand why I couldn't drink socially. And I said, you knew this from the beginning, that I wasn't a social drinker. They were angry because I couldn't smoke crack socially. She became a constant sheriff collar on me. She didn't like, you know, we argued a lot, fought a lot, and she became a serial cop collar. And I was constantly, and I know to this day that I played a major role in that. I was a serious, angry drunk, druggy. I was a thief. I was a liar. I was a cheater. But my motto was, if you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. I wormed my way back in, promised to never drink, promised to take it easy. And I remember her sister lived a block away, and she was there 20 years. She didn't know anybody. And getting to walk the dog around the neighborhood, I got to know all the neighbors, most of the neighbors would come out and greet me and my dog. There was a neighbor that lived down by the river. I knew he was one of us because he had these bumper stickers on his car. Easy does it, one day at a time. Oh, God, he's one of them. One of the nicest guys in the world. He always, I don't know how he knew, but he knew. Probably ripping out of my pores the smell of alcohol. But he always said to me, Steve, when you're ready, come and see me, I'll help you. As things progressed out of control with my, you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk, her constantly calling the sheriff on me, me running out the back door over the fence and having to spend nights in the beautiful summer heat of Florida. It was brutal. If the mosquitoes didn't get you, then the no-see-ums would. I finally went and knocked on this guy's door and told him I was ready. He took me to a meeting. I sat at that meeting and cried. After that meeting, I still couldn't give it up. I said, this isn't for me. I'm not ready. Do one more hit, one more bell ringer, one more drunk. That was the way out for me. It was the easier, softer way. I went out and my girlfriend changed the locks on the door, spent a boatload of money and got a big security system with the cameras, and all I do is walk up on her porch and boom, boom, the lights would go on and the cameras would go on, and she was gone with my dog. She kidnapped my dog. I'd say to myself, I'm going to kidnap my dog. What the hell's going on here? And I continued to drink and continued to drug, and this ain't that bad. I'll sleep on this guy's couch or that guy's couch. Well, though, I kind of wore out my welcome real fast because I couldn't drink and use socially. It got to the point where nobody wanted me around. Here I was, 1,200 miles from home, Milwaukee. I had no friends in the world. I had no hope. I had no money. I was unemployable. I was spiritually bankrupt. I remember buying these bottles of these jars of moonshine for $4 a jar. There was a guy down the street I could get $20 rocks from, and I remember sitting on the back porch of my girlfriend's house wallowing in my shit because I sold everything I owned, gave away the rest to move to Florida with this woman, and here I am alone with my crack pipe and my bottle of whiskey or grain alcohol, whatever that stuff was. It got to the point where it wasn't working. I don't know if I was many times while smoking crack, I got ripped off and somebody sold me drywall or soap, and I don't know what I was smoking, but it wasn't working anymore. The liquor wasn't working anymore. I was hungry, I was starved. I went up on the front porch and trying to break into the house that I thought was mine, and I couldn't get in. And I remember neighbors staring at me and saying, "You break in that door, I'm calling the sheriff." I sat down on the front porch and found a bag of dog food, dry dog food. She was gone with my dog. She kidnapped my dog. And I remember sitting there with my jar of whatever that was I was drinking. And I had myself a bowl of dry dog food with Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce on it. And I thought, this ain't that bad. Granted, it tasted like gravel with Sweet Baby Ray's on it, but I thought, this ain't that bad. But looking at the big picture, the progressiveness of my alcoholism and drug addiction, that's where it took me. Here I was, homeless once more. You know, jobless, hopeless, friendless, broke, financially and spiritually. I went and knocked on that neighbor's door this one last time and said, "I am ready." Gave me a hug and he walked me in his house as bad as I smelled. Gave me a toothbrush in a box, a little travel thing of toothpaste, a washcloth and a towel, and he pointed to his shower. He told me to take my time. Took a long hot shower, brushed my teeth, gave me a disposable razor. He said, "Are you ready this time?" I said, "I am so ready." He took me to a place just like this called YANA. Stands for You Are Never Alone. Introduced me to some people. I sat and I cried. I couldn't believe. Could not believe how bad, how far this great thing, alcohol, crack cocaine, and all the other drugs took me. Right down the toilet. Close friends back home before I went to Florida said, "Man, you're really at the bottom of the barrel, dude. You should think about putting a plug in that jug." I was like, "Man, I ain't that bad yet. I ain't bottom of the barrel. I'm scraping the sides." I was always defending King Alcohol. I always thought I could handle one more hit, one more bell ringer, one more drink. You know, back in the day, I thought I could dance with alcohol. I thought I was social. I thought it would make me friends. I thought it was the answer to all my problems. At the end of the road, it took me right down the toilet. No friends, no hope, no nothing. I sat in a meeting like this and cried my eyes out for a day or two. Finally, that neighbor said, "You ready to do the work?" I was still in the clouds, hanging out at the meetings. This neighbor let me stay in his tool shop that was air conditioned. He had a cot and a toilet and a shower for me. He said, "You can stay here whenever you want. When you get work your way back home to that woman, do so. Otherwise, you got a place to stay." Every morning I go to this, similar to the breakfast meeting, 6 a.m. meeting at YANA. If you want to go, come knock on my door. Come early. I leave early. And for a couple days there, I would go to YANA with him, sit through this 6 a.m. meeting, and sit the whole day at YANA and go to meeting after meeting. And I think it was on my second or third day, I said to a group of guys that were laughing and having fun. A lot of people were having fun there, but me. And I said to this guy, "What's the secret?" And he said, "If you want what I have, do what I do. Many meetings, many chances. Few meetings, few chances. No meetings, no chances. Find a sponsor, do the service work, do what's suggested to you. Nobody's going to tell you what to do. They're going to suggest you to do some things. Find a sponsor, get through these steps, do service work. Stay here, stay at the meetings." Found a sponsor, started going through the steps. Small miracles started happening. That obsession to use and drink was lifted. I don't know when, in the first 60 days. That was huge. Huge. I started to make friends. God started working through people. My favorite promise is, God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. 15 minutes left. Hi, y'all. Hi, y'all. I got a phone call within a couple months of sobriety. It was from a childhood friend that I knew in Milwaukee who now lives in Kennesaw, Georgia. He said, Steve, I got a bunch of real estate in Pensacola, Florida. I just bought this place. I'm going to be up there in the spring. It has four attached garage doors. I'm going to need a guy to hang my four doors, four openers. On top of that, you're handy in a lot of the trades. If you can make it up to Pensacola, Florida, I'll put you to work for a couple weeks. I'll pay you cash. I'll take care of your room and board. I'll give you meals. Think about it. I said, man, I thought about it. I thought about it already. The spring of 16, I went up to Pensacola, Florida. I went to work for this friend of mine and hung those four doors, hung those four openers, helped him with painting and drywall, putting windows in, helped him on his roof. They put me up. It took care of my meals. They gave me a car to drive to get to and from AA meetings. That was God working through them. I truly believe that. They're not like us. People like that don't do stuff. No, people, stuff like that doesn't happen to this guy. That never happened to this guy. As I stayed sober and went to meetings, more miracles started happening. That 3-week job up in Pensacola turned into a 7-week job. Him and his wife said to me, hey, instead of us flying you back to Fort Myers with a fistful of dollars, consider this. Come to Kennesaw with us. Help us unload the trailer. I got a grandmother's suite connected to my house. Come and stay with us. Stay for the weekend if you like it. I'll give you a car to drive to get to and from AA meetings. I got a lot of work to do around my house. I work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. I'll put you to work. I have neighbors that'll put you to work. Stay sober. Come and stay with us, Steve. We love you. They made me part of their family. Stuff like this doesn't happen to drunks like me. Found a house place. Found a home group. Made a lot of friends. A lot of friends. Today I have more friends than I ever had in my life. More miracles started happening. My sponsor coaxed me into getting involved in this jailhouse meeting out of Cherokee County Jail. I never thought I would pass the background check. They accepted me. It became my favorite meeting of the week. One of the miracles, I was leaving that meeting 2 years ago, and I was screaming down 575. See the state patrol coming down the hill. I'm going, what the hell's going on with him? I looked in front of me, there's no cars in front of me. I looked in my rearview mirror, there's no cars behind me. Looked down at my speedometer and started pumping on the brake. Hell, he's after me. By the time I got up by him, he pulled me over and he said, damn boy, I got you on radar for 109 miles an hour. That's called super speeding. You can go to jail for up to a year, lose your vehicle, blah, blah, blah. License and insurance, I gave it to him, he said. When was the last time you had a moving violation? I said 2002, and it was a bad year. He said, it sounds about right. I get a bad ticket, an expensive ticket every 20 years. He came back to my car and didn't give me a ticket. He gave my license and insurance card back, and he said, I'm going to let you go this time. I appreciate what you do back there. I said, back where? He said, volunteering at the jail. Slow down. Big miracle. God works through you people. After 2 years of living with my friend and his wife, things got toxic, family stuff. I had to move. I was frantic about where I'm going to live. My sponsor said, pray on it. I was outside before a meeting on a Friday night and mentioned to somebody that I was looking for a room to rent. Found a beautiful place to live. I have three sober roommates. It's like a long-term sober living house with people with long-term sobriety. I have 4 years. Everybody else has 8, 10, and 30 years. It's like having built-in counselors for roommates and friends. I look at you guys as my family today. I often say the Howe Place is my family. The Howe Place is my home, and you are my family. I look at my sobriety as life and death. Been to a lot of funerals, people ODing and dying. I didn't mention I had my stomach pumped out twice on 2 suicide attempts. But since I've gotten sober and have been doing many meetings, I've been doing the 90. I tell people I've been doing the 90 and 90 for the last 4 years and 10 months. I drank and smoked crack every day. Therefore, I go to a meeting plus a day. This is what works for me. As long as I keep my priorities straight, God and sobriety, things have been working for me. I truly believe that there's nothing I can't do without God and sobriety. I truly believe that. A lot of miracles. Today my life is great. It's because of you people. Thanks for letting me share.